Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. So, the Federal Reserve just came out and did a live stream on YouTube. Believe it or not, I had no idea this was coming. In fact, I wasn't going to do a video. I'm focusing on that webinar that we're doing today at 2 p.m. More on that in a moment. But I just saw this on Twitter, so I went over there. I watched some of it, and I thought, you know, they're giving some really good insights on one of the macro components right now that, quite frankly, is very confusing, and that's the labor market. So let's get right into this video, and the live stream is done, but I want to go back and review the insights from this insider from the private sector, believe it or not, and see what she reveals, and then I'll comment on it and see if we can use the data she is giving the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell specifically to determine maybe what the probabilities are of a recession, how close we are to a recession, and anything else that we can gather from her presentation. So let's go over there right now. And Josh, let's just do a quick test here to make sure that you can hear this. Let me know if you can hear this.
Well, surveys that we
Oh, it's were you good there?
Yep.
Okay, I always do playback speed double, so let me do normal playback speed. And I don't know if they intro this gal, but she is actually the lead economist with Indeed. Now, for those of you who don't know, Indeed is a huge online platform for job openings. So it's like, I mean, you can, this tells you how long ago I retired. But back in the day, we used Craigslist and Monster. I don't know if that's even a thing anymore, but that would have been back in like 2009, 2010. But nowadays, I guess Indeed is the big platform where employers can post jobs and potential employees or job seekers can respond to those job postings. And of course, Indeed gets all of the back end data, which this gal goes over right here in front of the Jerome Powell and some of the other people at the Fed. So let's eavesdrop here and see what she says. And then I'll stop it if I think there's something interesting that I'd like to comment on.
Getting responses from job seekers and employers along the way. Of course, what economist would I be if I didn't have charts? So I did bring a chart book. I won't reference it, but if you're curious, feel free to excellent. Feel free to check it out. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the all of our data products, the Indeed Job Postings Index, our wage tracker, are available on hiringlab.org. That's our site. And you can download all that data. As I like to joke, Friday night, glass of wine, whole bunch of data. You know? I'm a dork, yes. So let's dive right in. I'm struck by how interconnected a lot of what we're talking about today really is, right? Food, education, care, having a job, and it will all kind of come together when you look at it across the board. Housing, of course, in there too. Really, as the labor market has been returning to its new normal, I guess now, some of the trends that we saw during the pandemic are here to stay. The Indeed Hiring Lab research shows that even now, 3 years after the worst of the pandemic is over, remote and hybrid work are still extremely popular and quite prevalent. Both the share of job seekers that explicitly search for remote or hybrid work on Indeed, as well as the number of job postings that offer either remote or hybrid work, are still relatively high, even though they've fallen slightly since their peak in 2020.
Okay. George. I tried to hit the pause button, guys. Sorry. I was going to comment on that. Let me just get back to that place.
Fewer remote postings be available on Indeed.
Okay. So a couple things. When they first introduced her, I thought they would want to get some feedback on the strength or weakness in the labor market. And, well, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. When they introed her, it wasn't really, hey, here's this insider from the jobs market to let us know if there's really weakness, if we should be tightening, if we should be cutting rates. But it was more so, hey, can you tell us which areas of the labor market are really, really strong? So I was like kind of rolling my eyes. I'm like, okay, here we go. So this is, are we really going to get some good data from this gal, or is it just going to be some stooge that they put in there just to confirm whatever Jerome Powell said over the last week, or just to give us more of these PSYOP operations that no matter how hard it is for you, the average Joe, to put food on the table, you got to trust me, the economy's booming. I thought it was going to be one of those, but she actually gives some good data in there. Now, another thing that she was just saying is based on the back-end research they have, the amount of employees that are specifically searching for work-at-home jobs has declined only slightly since the Cerveza sickness. This makes some sense, but I'd like to juxtapose this to what I've been hearing on one of my good friends' podcasts called Marketing School. So my good buddy is Eric Sue. He owns a digital marketing company called Single Grain, where it's all B2B stuff. So, and he's got a lot of clients. And then his partner in the podcast is a guy named Neil Patel, who's huge in the digital marketing space. And he works with a lot of mega corporations as well as mid-sized businesses. I mean, these businesses that have budgets of $2-4 million, maybe sometimes even more, up to 10, well, not up to, but including $10 million a month that they're spending just on digital marketing. So, and they have literally hundreds, maybe thousands of clients. So they have really good information as to what's happening. They've got their finger on the pulse. And what they're saying on their podcast, which again is called Marketing School, is this trend toward work at home definitely peaked during the Cerveza sickness, but it's coming back down. One of the big reasons is because of the employers. Sure, the employees want to work at home in their slippers or their golden retriever and whatnot, but the employers are having to tighten the belt and they're saying, look, we need more productivity. The money isn't flowing like it was in 2022. Therefore, we need you back in the office. And another anecdotal piece of evidence I'll give you, I was just talking to Josh the other day about our good friend Kenny McElroy, who has, I don't know, 200-300 employees, something like that. And he still has some employees working from home. But right now, Kenny is looking around his business and trying to identify redundancies with his employees, because he sees the curve. He gets it from a macro standpoint. He's not just a real estate guy. So although he's out there aggressively seeking opportunities to buy properties or to develop properties, what have you, he understands that now's the time to be a little bit more risk off. And one of the main things that he's doing is tightening up the expense side of his P&L. And he said outright, flat out to Josh, the first people are going to go are going to be the people working at home. They're the first to go. Not that he has anything against them. It's just, he's like, look, it's easier. I don't really know them. Where the people that come into the office every day, I mean, it's just from a human standpoint, it's harder. And what Eric and Neil have been saying is a lot of these employers that they work with are now demanding that the employees come back into the office. I know Elon Musk went on record as to saying this as well. So even though she kind of sees, let's just say it going from 100% down to 95%, it's never going to go back to the way it was in 2019. No chance. But I think we're going to end up somewhere in the middle.
Despite the enduring popularity of remote work, is postings in sectors that are typically in-person and generally lower paying jobs that are currently getting the most application activity on Indeed. So in February, job postings in administrative assistance and food prep and service each received almost 9% of all job seeker application starts on Indeed. So you actually go and click on start an application on Indeed. Job postings for roles in customer service, retail, and sales all received more than 6% in total of total application starts Indeed last. Sectors with the biggest growth over the past year in applications include several tech and tech adjacent sectors, including the software development, information design and documentation, and operations and help desk services sectors. It is important to note that the growth in application in some of these sectors over the past years coming off of relatively low base. So for example, if you're looking at software development,
That's interesting. What she's saying there is there's significant, I think, not only month over month growth, but year over year growth for applications. So someone goes into Indeed.com and they're a new user, they're a job seeker. So they're going to set up a profile and start, responding to applications. And from, if I'm understanding what she's saying correctly, they're seeing significant growth at the low end with food service, with retail, with customer service, and then kind of the preliminary tech jobs. This makes a lot of sense to me because you just had this boom in growth as far as job openings at the low end due to the government locking everyone in a cage and distorting the economy to the degree to which they did. And you knew where that was going. We've talked about it on this channel. I've done whiteboards on it. It's the bullwhip effect. So I think a lot of these people maybe have a little less job security. And now all of a sudden they're going to Indeed. They're filling out an application just as a plan B. Or maybe they got fired. I think probably what's most likely is the employer has reduced their hours, which is interesting. So that doesn't show up in the labor. Well, it doesn't show up in the unemployment rate. It doesn't show up in the jobless claims that are all seeming to be rather strong, but it shows up in the person's bottom line. How much money do you have to pay your bills? And even if you have a job, two jobs, if you don't have enough money to make ends meet, you're going to have to get another one. And we could see this trend increase. And again, it's not a result of people losing their job, but effectively it's the exact same thing because the two jobs that they had where they were working, let's say 35 hours a week, have cut them down to 25 hours a week. Just using that as a hypothetical.
Roles, those applications are up more than 60% year over year, but they represent fewer than 4% of all total applications that were started last month. It's not yet clear to us what's actually driving these large increases in application activity in tech and tech-related fields, but it's something that we continue.
Because they're all getting laid off. It's not clear to you? How is this not clear? That seems pretty obvious. Just yesterday when we did that video breaking down the Zero Hedge article, and they showed, man, it seemed like 50, 60, 70 companies that had just had massive layoffs over the past 6 months. A lot of them were in the tech space.
Continue to certainly analyze as we dig into the data. We're seeing some early signals that there's a relationship between job sectors that are pulling back in terms of job postings the most, including tech, and an increase in apply share, speaking towards the phenomenon that, as people are let go or as more people are interested in these particular sectors, you just get more applies in these sectors and more churn happening in general.
Yeah, so notice what she said there. It's not just an increase in applications, but it's a decrease in job postings within that space. And I would assume that would also be applicable to the lower end. And another thing I want to point out is look at all of the businesses that are booming or have remained very resilient, let's say. So when I go to Florida, I was there a couple weeks ago, you look at the restaurants, as an example. I was up near Fort Lauderdale, and they're packed. They're just packed, but they're all packed with young people. And I would go to, some of the stores in the mall. It's all packed, but it's packed with young people. And my hypothesis was the major push in spending was in that lower age group, as far as the demographic, because their incomes went up, and I've got the BIS or the BLS, data to back this up. Their incomes went up the most by far. Their incomes in nominal terms over the past few years have gone up by like 20%. But I'm like, look, if all these kids are living at home, they really don't have any expenses. So even if inflation has gone up by 30% to where they'd have negative real wages, it doesn't matter to them because they have no expenses. So a 20% bump is still a 20% bump for them. And it's all just disposable income. But again, that bullwhip effect where these restaurants, they're not listening to the George Gammon channel. these bars, these cafes, these movie theaters, what have you. So they're over hiring, which is Michael Burry's point. And at some point, at some date, they're going to realize that the demand was artificial and the demand isn't sustainable. It was a sugar rush given by the government. And they're going to be like, wow, okay, now I see demand declining a bit, but I've got all these workers. We're going to drop their hours. Hopefully the Fed will drop rates and that will bring all this demand back. This is what they're thinking. But then at some level, they're like, okay, we need to start cutting people. And it seems like that would make the most sense. And my point is they're cutting employees that were the main driver of the resilient job market and the main driver of the resilient economy.
George, you can actually see that in the chart here. We haven't done an update on it, but I have it pulled up right now.
There you go. That's the exact chart I was referring to.
And
is that the BLS?
This is the Atlanta Fed, which is the one that we always go to.
You're right. That now that you say that, that's it, the Atlanta Fed.
But I mean, it's down pretty significantly for...
But look at the growth, because what Josh is pointing out there is that green line. What's the age group there, Josh? 16 to like 24? 24.
Yeah.
Right. So look at how much more wage growth they had than all the other age groups. And so what's the big difference there? It's they don't have any expenses. Where if you're 34 to 44 or 45 to 54, whatever, you are having to absorb all of the inflation because you've got to pay rent. You've got to pay for food. You've got to pay insurance. You have to pay all of these costs, or you have all these expenses where the cost, the price are completely going up. But for a 21-year-old, they don't have any, they're probably not even buying food. They're just eating whatever the hell's in mom's refrigerator. So therefore, if they get a 20% bump, they're living in hog heaven. They can go to the movies more. They can go out to eat. They can go to Top Golf or go to the bar, whatever it is. And now we're seeing the wage growth decrease substantially, which would match up almost exactly what we're hearing from this gal with Indeed. Okay, let's go back to the video here.
Which certainly holds true for a lot of these other sectors as well, that there's more turnover and therefore you start to see more applies. So whether workers new to the labor force is trying to return to the labor force or simply looking around at other opportunities, we know that the allure of higher pay remains the biggest motivator for beginning a job search. After all, compensation is king, or as I've been told, is queen. So, according to a recent Indeed survey of workers currently seeking new roles, almost 60% cited a desire for higher pay as the main motivator in their job search. Even as annual wage growth continues to slow, employers are still showing a willingness to pay top dollars to attract talent. The share of job postings advertising some sort of signing bonus has also remained elevated since mid-2022. The flexibility of offering that one-time financial incentive to new workers is especially popular in fields like healthcare. I'm curious to see what you have on that as well, where demand for workers remains high and where many employers are having an incredibly difficult time filling openings. So having that extra benefit there can be worth quite a bit. A close second behind higher pay was a desire for better benefits and more flexibility when you're asking job seekers. More than a third of survey respondents open to or searching for a new role noted a desire for better benefits. And roughly a quarter of respondents said they wanted more flexible hours and more flexibility to actually work from home. This desire for flexibility is especially pronounced among employed women when compared to employed men. And desire for remote work is really a main driver, particularly for women as they're searching for a new job. And I can add that I'm a happily remote working employee at Indeed as well. And I do enjoy that flexibility quite a bit.
Okay, a couple things there. First of all, of course, she has to just do the woke virtue signaling at the beginning. I mean, it's just makes me ill. I mean, can we just please get on with, do we have to do this just every single, whether it's sports, whether it's the Federal Reserve, whether it's the news, no matter what we're doing, social media, the mainstream, they just have to virtue, like they can't help themselves. Ah, oh, geez. Anyway, wages are king, or excuse me, wages are queen. It's just repulsive. Anyway, I'd also like to point out that the labor force participation is increasing. So this is another component of the job applications seeing a bump on Indeed.
Much of the frenzied competition for workers that characterized the job market in 2021 and 2022 is obviously over, but it's certainly not completely disappeared. You know, as the labor market has been cooling, a lot of sectors have unevenly cooled, and we're seeing a lot of different behaviors depending on which sector you find yourself. And so employers may not be able to compete purely on salary all the time, and they find that they're still able to attract candidates by offering flexibility or other benefits. Employers.
So here is some, I'll just give you some food for thought based on my own personal experience. When I was an entrepreneur, I had two ways of attracting talent or keeping talent there. You'd always want to give them some sort of pay increase, but you got to be very careful about giving them a permanent pay increase. Let's just say you're paying someone $20 an hour. You got to be careful paying them $25 because that can never go backwards, ever. And you say, well, George, what if you go through some tough times and it's above minimum wage? So sure, you could just have a meeting with all the employees and say, hey, look, it's temporary, but we got to take your pay from $25 down to $22 per hour just to get through some tough times due to a recession, GFC, cerveza sickness, whatever. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. You can't go backwards because what you get is a very demotivated staff and productivity just plummets. And that's for the people that don't quit. You can never, ever go backwards. So the only way that I would ever give a permanent bump like that from 20 to 25, let's say, is if I was extremely confident that the business itself could sustain the additional wages, the additional payroll over the long term. I had to be like as close to 100% as possible. If I wasn't, if I was a little iffy, if I was like, okay, we're having a good quarter, we're having a good year, but I don't know what's going to happen in the future, I would always give them a bonus. Because then it's achieving the same thing. They're getting an increase in pay, but they know it's temporary and they're not expecting it every single year. They're not expecting it every single quarter. So the fact that she's talking about employers trending towards a bonus instead of a pay increase, based on my own personal experience, would lead me to believe that there's more uncertainty than you would usually have in the job market itself with these employers. But that, I'm not saying that's what's happening. I'm saying that's just my personal experience and the way I used to do things. And whether the big employers in the United States today are doing the same thing, I don't know. I'll just food for thought.
That want to use different benefit offerings to differentiate themselves, to defray either salary costs or just to have additional benefits. And are quite prevalent still on Indeed. And we see a lot of really interesting trends that have to do with how many more benefit offerings are available right now. Schedule flexibility and the ability to work from home are relatively new benefits. Again, this is particularly a pandemic-driven trends. But more traditional benefits, including healthcare, pay time off, and retirement benefits, are still really important for workers. And we find that as we talk to jobs.
Yeah, but that's important for workers, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they want, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's what they're going to get at the end of the day. You got to produce more than you consume, bottom line.
The share of job postings on Indeed mentioning health insurance, for example, rose from 31% in 2020 to a whopping 48%. By February of 2023. So incredibly strong growth there. And the share of advertised retirement plans and pay time off both rose from 22% to 37% over that same time. Now, much of the rise in these advertised benefits...
I'm not saying this is what's happening, but as she's talking about more people wanting healthcare and that being a big year-over-year change... I'm just, the first thing that comes to my mind is, look, you forced all these people to get the medicine and I probably shouldn't say this on YouTube, but you guys know where I'm going with this. Maybe that's causing more people to require health care, or at the very least, be concerned about their future health. Throwing it out there.
Between 2020 and early 2022 occurred in typically low-wage sectors, including food prep and service, retail. But between early 2022 and early 2023, the pace of benefits growth and low-wage postings started to slow down. So we're not seeing quite as explosive movements at this point. Strong growth in advertised benefits for some segments, even as others have slowed, shows that the cooling market is not felt uniformly. It seems clear that there are still sectors where hiring remains relatively difficult, and employers may feel compelled to continue sweetening the pot for job seekers to attract the best possible candidate. Our research also shows that job seekers are receptive to non-traditional benefits and or may seek out employers that share their own personal beliefs. So company culture has been a pretty big...
I'm very tempted to fast forward this part because this is where she just goes off the woke virtue signaling deep end. And this is where it just gets, it's so obviously political that it just makes me sick to my stomach, but I'll let you guys listen to it. Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do. And this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, The Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd.
Big driver over the last few years as job seekers search for jobs. In fact, after the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs versus Jackson overturned a longstanding federal right to abortion, hundreds of U.S. employers,
said another way, a federal right to kill babies,
publicly announced measures designed to ensure access to reproductive care for impacted employees.
Again, reproductive care, let's just call a spade a spade. You've got a living human being inside of you, and you want to kill that living human being. And therefore, you know, you've got all these employers that are coming out and say, hey, we'll help you kill your baby. Just we'll help you do it. We'll pay for you to go across the border into another state and kill your baby. Why? Because we all pray to the Malthusian cult that is the World Economic Forum. And we all know that if we can help out and do our part in reducing population, let's go for it. Sorry to go off on that little tangent, but that's really the bottom line here. That's what's going on. Jeez.
Including paying for out-of-state travel care made unavailable in the worker's home state that they're based in. Now, realistically, these kinds of benefits are unlikely to be used often and will not apply to many workers at a given company. And just because a company did not make a public statement announcing any of these new benefits doesn't mean that they aren't that, still.
But I hate to go back to this, but think of how disturbed you have to be. Think about how confused you have to be to call the ability to kill a human being a benefit. Well, this is a benefit that your employer is giving you. I mean, it's just, especially from a standpoint of a woman. I mean, maybe she has kids. I mean, it's just, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not sitting here saying I'm in favor or not in favor, but look, even if you're in favor of abortion up to a certain date or whatever, it is what it is. You're still killing a human being, for heaven's sakes.
Willing to work with their workforce, behind the scenes. But it is clear that at least some job seekers do read these public announcements. And it's an important signal to them for company culture. And companies do reap some important recruiting advantages by sending these signals.
So again, so she's, look at how she's framing this. She's framing this as the companies that do, that pay for you to kill your baby, that this is giving them some significant advantages, as if the companies that stand their ground and say, absolutely not, we are taking the opposite position, as though that would give them no advantage whatsoever with a certain demographic of the United States. You see, so she's focusing on, I'm positive there's some, you know, people way on the left or whatever they consider themselves that would see this as a benefit, and therefore the advantage would go to that employer. Sure, if you're trying to find these woke individuals, then great. Yeah, you're going to get all those people. But she's neglecting to talk about the advantage from the corporations that are taking the opposite position, attracting people who aren't woke. And that just, that goes to show you the bias here, just by the way she's framing it.
So we dug in and did some research and found that post-ops clicks on postings from announcing firms increased by 8% compared to similar firms that did not make these announcements. And that's roughly equivalent to behavior we'd see if a company raised wages by 12%. We'd also see that sort of increase in clicks along the way. So finally, another feature that we know is attractive to job seekers is pay transparency. As of January 2024, a majority of job postings on Indeed included at least some sort of information about pay, up from less than 20% prior to the pandemic. Much of that rise can be attributed to recent local laws requiring disclosure in some states. But the rise in pay transparent job postings has been observed even in areas where disclosure was not required by law. We believe that disclosing pay upfront in a job posting can also help lead to faster hiring overall, just a better match and at the end of the day. To us, it is no coincidence that pay transparency has grown fastest in a handful of industries, including childcare and healthcare, where job postings have held up the strongest over the past year, strong demand, hard to fill, and demand for workers remains high in these industries, and employers are giving as much potential information as they can upfront in order to attract. In a still competitive job market in which job openings still outnumber unemployed workers, it is important for employers to meet workers where they are and make a good faith effort to meet their demands for flexibility and, of course, benefits whenever. I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah. So, and lastly there, I'll maybe comment on some of the questions she's taking. But you need to meet workers where they are. Okay. You do if you can afford that, right? But she's coming at it from this kind of fantasy world. Like, I'm not going to say she's a socialist, but she comes at it from this view that every single business just makes piles and piles and piles of money. And the only reason they don't pay their employees more is just because they're greedy. At the end of the day, they're just greedy and they just want another $100 bill to light their cigar with as they just, do a swan dive into their pile of cash, like Scrooge McDuck or something. And my point there is, look, if the economy is slowing down, let's just say that we get a no landing, but the economy slows down, or let's say we get a soft landing, or we get a bit of a recession, or we get a hard landing, that's times are going to change very, very quickly. And as an employee, you know, you're going to have to say, look, I want to take any job I can get. Another thing that's interesting, too, is the wave of immigrant, we'll call it the immigrant crisis. Most of these people, based on the evidence that I have from all my employees, most of these people have no skills, like literally zero skills. They don't even speak English. So, you know, janitors, housekeepers, et cetera. I mean, they couldn't even get a fast food job because, again, you'd have to be able to speak English. But there are some that I'm sure have those skills, and they're probably going to be filling a lot of the jobs that the Americans aren't filling right now or weren't willing to fill due to the distortions in the economy that was created by the government locking everyone in a cage. So I'm not saying it's good or bad for an employer to hire an illegal immigrant. I'll let you be the judge. But the bottom line is you've got an extra, I mean, how many people have come into the United States over the last couple months? A million, 2 million, 3 million? I don't know, but nobody really knows. So even if it's 500,000 people that speak English, that have these skills, they are now competing against all these other people that thought, you know, every single time that I quit and apply for another job, I'm just going to naturally get a pay increase. And therefore, I can demand that my employer gives me X, Y, or Z. I can demand that my employer will pay for me to go across the state and kill my baby if I made a bad decision by getting drunk one night or however it happened. And they might not have as much leverage moving forward. Again, we'll have to see how this immigrant crisis plays out. So I think I might be able to go back to the questions, Josh, even though, yeah, we can. Okay, cool. So we'll just use the laptop computer and just keep it going.
A lot of information.
We could probably talk for half an hour.
Send us your slides.
Yeah. But you mentioned some of those differences. Could you tell us a little bit more about the differences that employers are looking for in educational requirements and skills requirements and other qualifications that they may be looking for in this new work?
Certainly. We're seeing employers relaxing the more traditional educational requirements along the way, and oftentimes in order to broaden their applicable pool of candidates. Particularly, we saw this as the labor market was really tight and you had to kind of go out of your traditional pool in order to be successful in hiring. Mm-hmm. As of January, a small majority, 52%, of job postings on Indeed did not mention any formal educational requirements. That's up from a small minority of 48% prior to the pandemic. But I think most notable is that the share of postings requiring at least a bachelor's degree, so a four-year degree, fell from more than 20% prior to the pandemic to now roughly 17% earlier this year.
Oh, and I can assure you that's going to continue to plummet. In fact, I think that maybe 5-10 years down the road, having a college degree will actually be a ball and chain. It'll be a burden. Like the employers will actively seek people who did not go to college.
So it's a small change, but it's actually quite significant and notable. Declines were also observed from the share of jobs that require at least an associate's degree or even a high school diploma. Our research shows that the trend is also widespread across occupation sectors. So with in mind that this could be a mixed issue, it was not. Looking within sector, this all certainly holds true. And there are a few reasons why employers might forego formal educational requirements in job postings. The most obvious, of course, is simply that the job doesn't actually require.
Actually, I would disagree. The most obvious is because employers don't want employees who have been brainwashed by the school system, by the state-run school system. They actually want people who have independent thought.
A formal education, and instead requires a basket of skills that are learned on the job or that you carry over from prior experience. Beyond that, it appears that employers may omit educational requirements in job postings when they're obvious or they're assumed or implied. A good example of this is a physician in sector and surgeon jobs. We all know and really hope that our personal physicians completed extensive medical school training and residencies. So it's highly unlikely that someone without formal medical training would apply to become either a physician or a surgeon would. Even so, roughly a third of job postings for physicians and surgeons only technically require a minimum of a bachelor's. Similarly, employers will often focus on requiring licenses or certifications in job postings, but omit the formal education required to actually receive those certificates. So for example, that could be from a certification for the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, which actually is a certification, but you need some vocabulary.
Yeah, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know why we're going over this I don't know why she is going over this because it seems like a moot issue. All we care about is the rate of change. Of course, there's going to be some job postings for a doctor that isn't going to say, hey, you need to have an MD or you need to have these qualifications. But what I would be interested in is, or, and I'm assuming that the gal that asked the question, what she's interested in is there a change? Do we see that declining? Do we see that increasing? Not that, do we see that at all? So to give her the benefit of the doubt, I'm sure she's under a lot of pressure. She doesn't do this every single day. So far, other than just the whole woke nonsense dive off the deep end, she's given a lot of data and I think a good presentation overall.
Vocational training to be able to receive. And you know, if you go to like your local garage, you'll have seen the ASE sticker on the garage or the overalls that a mechanic might wear. So none of this should be read as any kind of a disparagement of the value of a formal post-secondary education, stay in school. The life experience, social connections, and soft skills learned in college and beyond still matter a great deal.
The soft skills learned in college. Are you kidding me right now? How can she say that with a straight face? So all of this garbage you're taught in school, which I would argue makes it harder for you to succeed in life as an adult. Somehow we're supposed to champion these kids learning how, or maybe not learning how to be anti-fragile. I mean, maybe that's the best way to say it. That's what college does today. It teaches kids how to be fragile when in the real world, you need to be anti-fragile. And for some reason, we are condoning that.
And there's abundant data pointing to the financial benefits of actually having a formal education.
So I got to call her out on this one too. I've looked at all that data and the problem with it is they confuse correlation and causation. So what they'll do is they'll sit there and say, okay, you've got X amount of people that have a college degree and they make X amount of dollars. And then you've got X, Y amount of people over here that don't have a college degree and they make, let's just say on average, $20,000 less per year. That is, as Brett Weinstein would say, sophistry. That is maximum, epic, mega sophistry. And what I mean by that is because you don't know, look at how many more variables there are. I would like to see a study that breaks down how many kids that graduated from college have parents that didn't get a divorce. In other words, the parents are still together, because I think there would be a stronger correlation to parents that are kids that were raised in a home with both parents, especially a strong father figure, to future income than any college degree. So you have to say, okay, if a kid went to college, does that mean that the college degree is what gave them the skills to succeed in life? Or was it the fact that kids that go to college typically have better skills from the start because they were raised in a family that actually prioritized things like education? So again, my point is, it's not necessarily the college degree. It goes back to the way they were raised. And if you just took those variables, I think there would be a much stronger correlation with the outcomes that you see later on in life once they get into their working age years.
But it feels safe to say that some formal educational requirements are unlikely to then disappear entirely from job postings, especially in areas like healthcare, engineering, in other areas that require a good deal of formal education and skill. But a shrinking pool of job postings requiring a formal degree represents a major opportunity for the roughly two-thirds of Americans that don't have a four-year degree. Workers willing to prioritize skills development and embrace emerging technologies will likely benefit as employers adopt skills.
In other words, kids, if you don't want to be an engineer or doctor, don't go to college. It's a massive waste of time, massive waste of money. And the only thing you're going to get is a thorough brainwashing in Marxism.
First hiring approaches to attract, and we're starting to see more move-ins towards that direction. For example, on Indeed, we have screener questions that say, can you answer these particular questions to be able to suss out skills that might not be apparent from just looking at a resume? Relaxing those requirements means employers can reap the benefits of an expanded candidate pool which may prove vital in coming years as demographic changes hit us and our.
I'm done. Obviously, based on her answer, you can tell that these questions were were given to her in advance, and they're just asking the questions that they all agreed on. I mean, she's literally how could you sit there and have an answer a question that was just right off the cuff, or was actually conversational, or a real question that wasn't scripted in advance, and just happened to have the answer, like a half hour long answer right there on your iPad or whatever. Give me a break. All right. So that's all I can handle. I can only take so much of this drivel and nonsense before I've got to just wave the white flag, guys. Sorry about that. All right. But it gives us some, I think the main takeaway there is it's all about the bullwhip effect. All about the bullwhip effect. We see it playing out right now in real time. And that's something that we've got to pay attention to, especially at that lower end, which is where we saw the majority of job growth, or where we have seen the majority of job growth since, call it 2021. On that note, guys, if you want more expert, real expert opinion, I would suggest checking out rebelcapitalistlive.com. That is the conference I'm doing. I'm super excited about it. It's going to be in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. And I don't have it pulled up here, but if you go to rebelcapitalistlive.com, you can see past speakers. You can see the present speakers we have, and we're going to be talking about securing your finances, making sure that you're not only able to survive whatever's coming, but thrive, personal liberty stuff, freedom, Plan B. We're going to be talking about some red pill stuff there with my good buddy, Rich Cooper. So you got to get your tickets ASAP. The price goes up the closer we get to the event. And you can check out all the information you need at rebelcapitalistlive.com. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.